Okay, guys, welcome to the show. This is Deborah Gets Red Pilled, episode 127. It is Friday, May 27th, 2022. I'm here with my co-hosts, Deborah Z and Chud X. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hello.
Yeah.
We're experiencing some internet difficulties, but I think we might have got it straightened out. It's behaving much better now. How are you guys doing today?
Doing just great.
Yeah, it's a good day. I got some chicks outside for the first time in their life, and that's always a beautiful thing.
Yeah, that's great. It's a gloomy day up here in Northwest Oregon, but Emily took me to let me leave the farm. She let me go to Home Depot and Tractor Supply, and she let me get tools at both places.
Woo! Disneyland.
Yeah, I was driving to town, and I realized the last time I was off the farm was last Saturday.
Dude, that's pretty cool. Is that good feeling, or is that a bad feeling to you?
It felt good to like be somewhere else for a minute.
Yeah. It feels good to get off, but at the same time, when it's been that long, you're like, damn, man, I'm really doing this. You know, like this is your life. Your life isn't coming and going from the place that you're home. Your home is your life.
Yeah. Yeah. The weather's been kind of bad here lately, but it's warmer, but it's still just kind of gray and gloomy. I think I'm going to do some gifting tomorrow. Did you get a message from someone about that, Chud X?
No.
Well, I was told by someone that we both know that if we're going to be doing it anytime soon, that this is the weekend that we should be doing it, like, really? Tomorrow.
Reasoning?
There's some other people that might be doing it starting on the northern coast of California all the way up to where you're at. And it's okay. We want to see how everything interacts with each other.
Okay. Yeah, I'm in.
Yeah, I've got to do all that stuff too. So I think I might do it tomorrow. Turn the phone off and go give some presents.
Yeah.
What are the presents for?
Well, you got to go back and you got to listen to our episode with Mitch, the orgone donor, Deborah. Oh,
okay.
Great episode.
Yeah, it's really good. Really long, really weird, but awesome.
Very inspiring for weirdos like Adam and myself.
This week?
No, it was, it came out when I was in Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'll go back and look.
Yeah. It's pretty wild. Remember Matt Landman, Frankenskies, the guy who talked to us about weather manipulation? It's like that 2.0.
Uh-huh.
It's the next level. It's like we've already got the problem identified. What are we going to do about it except feel bad?
Yeah.
So
and Mitch comes along and gives us some ways to feel good.
Yeah.
Okay.
To have some hope.
I always like to feel good. So.
But yeah, speaking of feeling bad, I woke up in the middle of the night last night. We have a broody hen. Mm-hmm. So I put this. To get them, broody means they just hang out in the chicken coop in their nesting box and they won't come out. They don't lay eggs. I don't know what causes it. It just happens to chickens a lot. Have you ever experienced that, Chud?
All the time.
Yeah. So I don't know what your solution is. What we've read is that you're supposed to separate them. So we have like a dog kennel. We put them in the kennel with some food and water of their own and let them chill there for like 4 days. You let them out and they're kind of reset most of the time. So we haven't had any bad luck with predation of our hens yet. We've only lost one since we've been out here, and that was at the paws of Wilma. Mm-hmm. So I had this one it's not as bad as it sounds. It still sucks, but I had the one in the dog kennel outside the coop last night. I woke up at like 2:30 to some chickens going nuts. And I the sensor light was on in the backyard. So I was like, uh-oh, I kind of went back to sleep and then I heard it start again. And I went out there and the light came on and I saw like a creature run across behind the chicken coop, came out into the clearing. I could tell it was a raccoon. And so I go down. The one in the kennel is alive. She's got like some of her top feathers are like spread out all over the place. So the So the kennel might have been just big enough that that little fucker's arms couldn't reach in far enough to get her. And she made it. But so I was like, okay, that's good. I took her out of the kennel. This is like 3 a.m. at this point. I'm in my underwear outside and like some rubber boots. And I put her back in the coop. And I think it's all good. Wake up this morning. And we're missing one. And I start walking around the chicken area. And there is feathers of the one that's missing that I know is missing. And it's this one wild one that we've got that sleeps in a tree by herself every night by choice. And her sister's the one that Wilma killed. And we got them later on. And they're like two like pretty wild birds. They're super independent. And they're crazy. They are the ones that like fly out of the chicken area. Like they could fly even after we clipped their wings. And she just preferred to be by herself in a tree every night instead of going into the coop. And yeah, so the first squawking I heard, I think was her getting it, them getting her out of a tree. And yeah, this morning I found her at the end of the driveway and it was pretty gruesome. No head, just gutted.
Just gutted. Most of the flesh still there.
Everything there. Just the head ripped off.
Classic raccoons.
And the guts ripped open.
So not for food, huh?
No, they're thrill killers.
Yeah, raccoons. I've always loved them theoretically, but now that I'm a chicken owner, they're serial killers. I hate them.
Yeah.
Can I add a gruesome detail?
Please. Yeah.
So we were leaving to go run errands so that Adam could have a field trip off the farm. And we saw two red chickens, our chickens, running. And sometimes they run when they have like a treat in their mouth in this certain way where they're like, oh, I don't want anybody else to see me because like I got this special worm. And Adam and I looked at each other and we were like, uh-oh. And we looked closer and one of the red chickens had, her name was Pony Girl, RIP, Pony Girl's beak in its mouth. And beak. Some skin attached to it and some feathers.
Oh, that's gruesome.
I got out of the car and I chased the chicken down and she dropped Pony Girl's beak and I picked it up with a leaf and then flung it out the window. It's dark.
Yeah.
Dark.
Okay, that's all I have to share for this episode. Thanks.
It's not as gross as what I thought. I thought she was going to say a piece of entrail or something.
No, but I
beak picked still, not that that's less
gross. The beak is.
They're both pretty gross.
I picked her up and like threw her in the field across the street and like her, like in the yellow part, like, I don't know if that's the intestines, but it was like 3 feet long at this point was hanging out. And I threw her into the forest and like that part, like stuck on the blackberry bushes, like right in front of me.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, it was a bummer. She's a good chicken. So we're down to 10 now. And I don't know, but maybe hopefully this will, encourage Emily to let me get a livestock guardian dog. I want to get a Great Pyrenees really bad.
Yeah.
So
that'd be cool.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a bummer, but it's happened. 2 out of 12 in a year on a homestead isn't bad, I guess.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
And yeah, and like the messed up thing about the Wilma one is I don't know if Wilma killed it. I think she might have just been plain dead and I finished the job off, but she might have been okay. So I might be the killer. So
yeah. Things happen like that.
Yeah. It's just part of being on a farm, I guess. But yeah,
last bird that we lost around here, I couldn't believe it. I thought it was one of our chickens. I was out in the woods kind of far. I couldn't believe it as I saw all these white feathers. I was like, man, whatever it was must have brought it back all the way out here and done this deep in the woods. Mind you, we're not close to the coast. I mean, we're somewhat, but not really. There's a seagull out there, torn to bits.
Wild.
Yeah, just not what I was expecting. You know, the web feet and everything. I just left it where it was, and it's still partly there. Some animals have picked at it, but it doesn't seem to be anybody's preferred meat out there. That's for sure.
Yeah, a couple last week, some of our neighbors up the road were had like the mobile butcher come out to their house and uh-huh. slaughter some cows. So I went out in the middle of the day and there's always hawks flying around, but like usually way up high. And there was a ton of them, like really low, like 30 feet up, like right above the chicken coop. So I was like, oh no, what's going on? I thought they were like going to come down and get the chickens. So I ran inside, I grabbed my rifle and I shot at them. I mean, it's hard to hit a bird with a rifle, not a shotgun. Yeah.
It still does a good job though of they get the fuck out of there
when yeah, you do they, that. They flew away, but yeah. And then our neighbors told us, yeah, they had they were butchering cows up the road, so they all come out.
I don't know if I've ever asked you this, Adam. Do your chickens run around? Are they contained or do you let them do their thing?
So they have a giant chicken area that I built. There was an existing fence when we moved in. I put the coop there. Wilma was getting a little rowdy with them, so I found some fencing in the bushes and I just fenced in off of what was already there. Recently I've torn out all the old fence that was there, and as soon as we got the sheep, it started having problems. They started messing with it and like eating the grass around the old fence that hadn't been trimmed down or weed whacked for, you know, whatever, 30 years since that fence went up, because it was all rusty. Sure. It's old rusty goat fence. And so the chickens started getting out under that. I was just like, well, I might as well take it out anyway. So they're out in the pasture and walking around all day.
That's great. I like doing that, but I flip around.
Yeah, you
know, when we lose one to a hawk or something like that, I let them recoup. I don't know if that's where that word comes from or not.
But
I put them in the coop. I'll keep them in there for, you know, 4 to 5 days without, which they've got a lot of space in there. It's not,
yeah,
I'm not tying them in too close, but it just gives them some time to kind of regroup and be together again. And then I let them back out again and it's been going pretty good.
Yeah. The main project I'm working on right now, the stuff I went and got like fence posts and stuff today to redo it. I've got fencing and old T posts that I've been pulling out with a tractor.
Yeah.
So I got posts today. So, I'm going to start. Let me ask you this. You ever put in those big round, like 5-inch fence posts? You use concrete or you just bury them?
Just bury them.
What do you have a lot of clay where you're at?
Yeah.
Do you just repack it with the clay?
Yep. Yeah. So, okay. Like the trick I've learned is slow, 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 slow. I get my hole deep enough, which is like 4 or 5 feet deeper than I think that I want to go.
So you can put gravel on top of that.
After I get in, I go down, I go through our sandy loam, and then I hit clay and then I hit rocks and I still go another foot into that.
What are you using stuff to dig it out with?
I got a couple of different post diggers. I got one that's like an auger that I twist with my hands, and then another one that's the kind that you jam straight down and pull the handles apart.
That's all I've got.
And that's what I start using once I get down to those rocks, because then I'm kind of picking up a rock at a time to pull them out.
Yeah.
And then I get my post in, and I'll take a level and just like use a big rubber band or something to tie it to the side of the post so I can just see about what's level. And then I have all the material I pulled out right there, not the rocks, but everything else. And I start, at first I was going too fast and they were loose, but I go with, it's a ridiculously small amount of like clay and soil. I kind of mix it all together and start packing it in, putting just a little bit at a time. And then I have a steel fat rod that I use, and I go all the way around the outside. Like a
giant piece of rebar, kind of.
It's like that, but fatter than rebar.
Yeah.
It's like maybe like 4 pieces of rebar width. It's one big hunk of steel that I just found laying around, and it's kind of bent, so it works real good to come down at an angle. I'm not rubbing my knuckles on the side of the post.
Yeah.
And it's low and slow of putting just the tip of a shovel, get some stuff on there, and then shake it around the outside, grab that post, tamp it all the way around. and repeat and repeat and repeat. And it seems like it's taking too long, but if you kind of get in the zone, you kind of zen out on it, before you know it, you're all the way up. And because I'm packing it just like maybe an inch, bring it down to a quarter inch, another inch, quarter inch, packing it down. By the time I get to the top, I could like slam my truck into that thing and it's not going to come out.
Okay.
Cause it just packs in so tight, no concrete, no extra. And then I usually have a little bit of extra material, cause that big post is taking up most of the space that was in there before.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. It's hard to find. Like you look it up on the internet or YouTube and you get 100 different ideas and people telling you, you can't do things certain ways. So I'm going to give that a shot tomorrow, but I know this is got to be intriguing for the fans to be hearing about this, but
it's one of those things. You just got to start doing it. That's the way that works for me and my soil and my situation.
Yeah.
I went through the same thing you did. You will find yourself in a mess trying to learn from YouTube of that. You'll think you got it watching a video, then you watch another one and they're saying, don't ever do what you think you just learned. That's not going to work. And it's probably true for them, their situation, their material, their tools, whatever, but that's what works for me.
Cool. Well, guys, our guest is here. Should we just let him in?
Sure.
Sure.
All right, here he comes. My internet's okay?
Yep, internet's just fine.
Yeah, we're doing great since the reboot.
Charlie, are you there?
I am here.
Guys, Charlie Robinson's here.
Hi, Charlie.
Hi,
he's good completing to see you again. He's the Mario Lemieux of Deborah Gets Redfield. He's completing the hat trick. I think this is your third appearance. I think the only other person to do that is Monica Perez. So you're in good company, but so excited to have you here. You're one of my favorite podcasters and one of my favorite guests. We have a long history together on our show. You came on episode 6. You came on episode 56. And now you're here on episode 127.
Nice. I love it. Love the hat trick.
Yeah.
I would have said Gretzky, but whatever. That's fine. If I get my fourth, that's a Gretzky hat trick.
Yeah. Let's see. I think the last time you were here, we talked about the SPARS document.
Yeah.
What I kind of want to do on this episode is it does feel like we're being hit on all angles with a whole bunch of different things. The news cycle seems shorter than ever, but then this whole deal with COVID's gone away, no masks. I think that we need to keep our heads on a swivel for what's coming in the future. And I think you're the guy to tell us all about this. And if we can leave this episode, it's a Friday night with Deborah having terrible dreams all weekend long, you've done your job.
I'm so sorry. You're going to have terrible dreams though. I mean,
that's why I'm here.
It's par for the course. I know here. It's look, I am seeing things that, that make me very nervous because they're following a pattern of events that we saw. Well, we didn't really see them here so much, but in the 70s and 80s in Europe, there was a program called Operation Gladio, which was a leave behind group that NATO put there right after World War II. They took these little pockets, these little groups of people that were sort of like, I don't know, homegrown domestic terrorists, but they were like kind of the good guys. Like if they were in France, they were like people that wanted what was best for France and they were sort of willing to fight, but they weren't officially in the army. A lot of this happened in Italy and NATO said, hey, look, we want to create these little groups and we want to be super quiet about it. Nobody's going to know, like not the military of this country. If you guys get busted, we'll deny any knowledge of you, but we're going to create these groups in case the Russians come back after World War II. You know, we just had this big war and Germany got destroyed and Russia went back to Russia, but we're not totally convinced that they're not going to come back. So if they come back, we'll have you guys pre-positioned in these countries. You know,
in Italy, was it possibly Antifa?
Yeah. I mean, it was like, it was like, it was kind of like that. Yeah. It was
well,
like,
that's where they started in the old fashioned.
Yeah. It was like an Italian Antifa. And so the Russians never came back. So these guys just kind of hung around and did whatever for two decades and they got bored. And finally NATO was like, well, you know, you guys are good for something else. We can use you to kind of shape policy. We can use you guys as a terrorist group to be the boogeyman that sets off all these bombs and shootings and all these things in order to demand so that the public will demand greater security from the state. And then if they demand greater security from the state, then NATO can be like, well, we'll give you this, but you got to do what we say, or, you know, you can sort of manipulate things. So what they would do was they would go into places like, oh, I don't know, grocery stores, and just start mowing people down and setting off bombs and shooting up schools and doing all these things. So I think we have Operation Gladio 2022 here in America.
Oh,
I think this is NATO. God. I think it's NATO doing this. I think it's above the FBI. The FBI is the largest domestic terrorist organization in America, but even they have limitations. But I had a great conversation one night with Ole Damigard when we were in Mexico at an Acapulco, and we were talking about Gladio till like 2:30 in the morning in this bar. And I was asking him, because he's Swedish, you know, and he has all these connections there, and he was talking about the reality of the situation there and how it all worked. And so part of that conversation really got me thinking about, you know, recently with the grocery store shooting. I'm outside of Denver. There was one in Boulder a couple months ago, you know, just some dude who randomly just decided to shoot up a grocery store. We have a second one in Buffalo, obviously, with a white supremacy component to it, which is always convenient. We had Kathy Hochul almost immediately in the days after that, literally 2-3 days after that, say, I've signed a bunch of legislation on gun control. And also,
like, how can you make New York gun control even crazier? It's wild.
And how can you do it that fast too?
Yeah.
It's almost like she had a bunch of legislation sitting in her top drawer that she just whipped out as soon as there was a shooting. And the things that she specifically mentioned though was, we need to do something about the social media that's riling these people up. So, and she named Twitch, 4chan, 8chan, and another one. And I forget exactly which one it was. Probably got it written down.
All
somewhere,
the usual subjects for that.
You got it. Exactly.
Shoot or something.
So
like
it's
that.
Like they go, well, how many agendas can we cram into this one event? You know, can we can have it be guns? We can have it be mental illness. We can have it be white supremacy. We can have it be radicalized online by, you know, in these chat groups and everything. It's like there's, as soon as you start to see all of these different items getting dragged into the conversation, then there's legislation immediately. It's a setup. That's how this works. This isn't even a new strategy. This is something that's been going on a long time. And speaking of the word strategy, in Europe in the 60s, 70s, and 80s with Operation Gladio, what they were putting forth was called the strategy of tension.
Right.
And it was created to, it was just there to just keep everybody on edge so that you, in fact, you know what? Let me do this. Let me read this. This is a quote from the guy who blew the case open, not because he was a good guy. He was on trial for a bombing and they didn't know anything about it. The judge in this guy's case is the one who cracked open Operation Gladio wide open, because he had no idea. Nobody knew anything about it.
Where is he from?
This guy, he's an Italian. This is Vincenzo Vinciguerra. Yeah.
I've been to Italy twice, Charlie. Last time I was there was like 2001. I was in Rome, but it's like a weekly occurrence that some commie group like bombs something there. It's like, it's constant. You hear about it all the time.
Well, this will fit the bill then, because this guy was a member of the neo-Nazi paramilitary group Ordine Nuovo, which translates to
New Order.
Not the band. this is his testimony while he was on trial for the bombing. This is what makes me very nervous. This is what he said. Quote, you had to attack civilians, the people, women, children, innocent people, unknown people far removed from any political game. The reason was quite simple. They were supposed to force these people, the Italian public, to turn to the state to ask for greater security. This was precisely the role of the right in Italy. It placed itself at the service of the state, which created a strategy aptly called the strategy of tension, insofar as they had to get ordinary people to accept that at any moment, over a period of 30 years, a state of emergency could be declared. So people would willingly trade part of their freedom for the security of being able to walk the streets, go on trains, or enter a bank. That's the plan.
Uncle Ted told us about this as well, right?
Yes.
And Bill and Bill Cooper.
And Bill Cooper.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's only hidden to the extent that people don't know to go look for it. But like, yeah.
You the can name go says and, it all. The strategy of tension. It puts us into that spot where we beg for it. We want it. Do they need consent? Sure. Because they got it, because we're in a tenuous spot where we want it. I mean, and when I say we, I don't necessarily mean the four of us on screen right now, but right. We as a whole.
Yeah, this is back to what I was saying. Kathy Hochul requested New York State Attorney General Letitia James investigate the social media platforms that, quote, promote and elevate hate speech, such as Twitch, 4chan, 8chan, and Discord.
Discord. Discord censors people all the time, though.
My Discord server for macroaggressions lasted 5 weeks, and this went away.
Yeah, I've been on a whole bunch of them, and they've all gotten canned. OBDMs is still up, surprisingly, but
yeah.
So what about this Texas one? That's the most. It's the other wild thing is that there was no mass shootings during COVID. That all went away. Yeah. I guess all these mass shooters were quarantining, but it's all popped up again. It's all happening. And what do you think about this Texas one though? That's the kind of confusing thing because the perpetrator, the perp, doesn't really fit the bill.
No, he does. No, he doesn't. I don't know. I don't know what to make of this. I mean, there's some things that don't add up. There's the, you know, we know about the police not going in and that to me is like, well, you can't go in while the Gladio squad is in there.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
And I say that not like only kind of half joking, because I know that there's videos. I don't know if you've ever seen the video of the Parkland school shooting, the video taken from an elevated position. I think it was from a helicopter that was shooting down on the school. And you see these guys in all black loading huge duffel bags on the back of a white truck and then driving off. And then they arrest that dope down at McDonald's, you know, that kid. Yeah. So this is like, I'm only half joking when I say like, you got to give the Gladio team time to get out of the school. I don't know. I don't know. I need more information on it. I need to sort of like get into all of this. I'll tell you this. It automatically sounds, it sounds weird. You know, it's Texas. And that actually makes sense in terms of a place where you would want to have a false flag, because then you could say, see these Texans, they're crazy with their guns and we got to get rid of the guns. And it's always about guns. I mean, I think it's important to sort of work backwards from like what the goals are. One of the goals is to disarm the public. That has been a goal for a long, long time. There's a great video of them signing into law it might have been the bump stock ban, but it was one of those. And Dianne Feinstein from California is standing right behind who's signing it. And she's just doing this and she can't help her. She's smiling so big. She looks like she's going to explode. She's so happy that they're signing this gun control bill. And Dianne Feinstein is a deeply evil person. And it makes me think that she's just feeling like we're just one step closer to slaughtering all these people.
Yeah.
It would be different if it was like, my grandma standing behind someone signing a gun control bill, I'd be like, oh, well, my grandma just doesn't want anyone to get my, you know, anyone else to ever get hurt. Not Dianne Feinstein, though. She's a deeply evil person. And to see her that giddy about gun control, and then to see what, you know, look at Australia. I hate guns. I'll be honest with you. I don't like guns. I had, when I was 8 years old, some guys tried to carjack me and my mom. I saw a guy put a gun to my mom's head. I don't like guns. I have very good close family friends whose son accidentally shot himself, killed himself. You know, I don't like it, but I recognize that when the guns are all gone from everybody, then it's just the state that has the guns. And of course, you know, criminals, but I consider the state to be a bunch of criminals. And you see what happens. I mean, look, ask Australia how the lockdowns were.
Yeah.
They're disarmed. They couldn't stand up. The most they could do is protest. They got COVID camps built for them.
Mm-hmm.
And they were forced in there. You saw what happened when those kids escaped from the COVID camps, the 16-year-old kids in Australia. It was a manhunt for them because they're sick. No, because this is the beginning of an authoritarian state. And rule number one, disarm the public.
Yeah.
Period. End of story. There's a quote in my Octopus book from Mao. He says, you disarm the population before the slaughter.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Deborah, he would know.
Deborah, are you familiar with some of the mass disarmaments of the populace in places around the world throughout history?
No.
Okay. Well, maybe we should go over some of them just off the top of our head. I think we could probably just figure it out by looking at history without even knowing that happened. So where are your relatives from?
You're asking me?
Yes.
Okay, my relatives. Well,
what's your religion?
I was raised in the Jewish religion.
Do you think that they may have disarmed Jewish people at some point in history?
I'm gonna have to say yeah.
Yeah. So we got that. We got Mao doing it, of course. I think we probably got the Khmer Rouge doing it, right? What else? Anywhere that there's been a mass genocide perpetrated by the state, Deborah, has been, they take away the guns first.
Congo,
right.
They killed 10 million people in Congo.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the Khmer Rouge, what they did in that, and this isn't like we have to get in our time machine. This is the late 70s. They made these sticks that had big balls on the end of them. And those sticks, you would just hit someone in the back of the head with it and it would kill them.
Yeah.
And because they didn't want to use all the bullets and everything. So what they did was they looked for the scientists and the teachers and the doctors and the lawyers, all the educated people, and they killed them immediately.
75% of this panel would have gotten it because we were glasses.
That's what I was going to say. The second part was once God. They ran out of those people to kill, they looked at anyone that was wearing glasses because they looked smart. So they killed them too. So when they were done, they killed one out of four people in Cambodia.
Oh, man. It's so
and he
wild.
Never apologized. He never said he was doing it wrong. And by the way, you know who sent him the instructions for it? The United States State Department did. There's a guy that wrote the document, the paperwork, saying this is how you do it. It was the United States State Department under Ford who sent that to him and said, this is the blueprint for slaughtering. So like our government is always involved in this to the extent that they can be, I would say.
Yeah. Deborah, thoughts? Yeah. Or Chud, go Chud.
Well, it's just, I can't help but think when I think about this type of stuff that so many people who are pro gun control in this country, at least are so in the name of peace. Hey, you know, I'm kind of a hippie. I don't like people dying, you know, guns kill people, right? I think I've seen that on a bumper sticker or something like that before. And that's never, ever, ever the state's idea when they're taking away guns. They are not trying to save anybody's lives. And it also, you know, bringing it into our modern time with gun control being ramped up right now at the same time that we're dealing with the food security issues, you know, I mean,
that's a good way to think about it too. Yeah.
I just had a conversation with a neighbor the other day and I realized I needed to slow down on what I was talking about because he's a very drunk, belligerent guy. And we were talking about my chickens and he was asking what I'll be selling my meat birds for. And I was just about to say, oh, no, these are all for my freezer. And I realized, no, I don't want this guy knowing because I know this guy has plenty of guns. He's drunk. He's belligerent. He's feeble-minded in one sense, but he's savvy enough that he ain't going to be the first to go. And if he knows that I'm over here doing what I'm doing, which he does to a certain degree, but he hasn't seen my bunker. if he knew what I had, if he knew because he knows I just got 25 new birds, those are all going to be in my freezer sooner than later.
Does he know that you just got a new flamethrower?
He does not know about my flamethrower. Okay. He also doesn't know about the cargo I've buried underground and all that kind of stuff. But but it really made me think last night after talking with him for a little while. Then it was like, you know, this is why I need to be armed to the teeth because of people like this, because that guy's going to get hungry at some, if things go the way I unfortunately see things going, that guy's going to get hungry at some point. And that guy and me are not going to be friends. Yeah. That's the kind of guy who will throw a child out of a building in order to feed himself for one day. You know, he's only thinking about himself and his own bottom line. Now, if we bring that back to the gun control that we're talking about, you know, if the more people who voluntarily give these things up, the more people who are making themselves vulnerable on a personal level with this food security stuff, outside of everything that we're dealing with grocery stores and supply chain and all of that kind of stuff, if that stuff does dry up, we need, especially anybody in like our position, Adam, where we're looking forward to the future on things like this. You better not take my guns. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. If it, like you said, it mostly, the argument is from good people who don't want other people to get shot. And I get that. I'm like, to an extent, I'm in that crowd. You know, I don't want people to get shot, but if taking the guns away, it doesn't solve that problem at all. It just doesn't. But it does create a brand new problem, which is a bunch of people disarmed. And unfortunately, we are nice, decent, warm, loving, good human beings that wouldn't think of doing that to other people. But that's a dangerous assumption to make, especially when things get bad. You saw how bad it got when toilet paper was out.
Yeah.
2 years ago. Wait till you're fighting some guy for the last bag of rice.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be a different story if we get to it. And I hope we don't. And I hope the supply chain doesn't fully break down. I'm not trying to give Deborah an aneurysm here for sure. But
yeah, where do you think those suckers in San Francisco are going to go after they run out of food, Deborah? Right across that Golden Gate Bridge into your backyard.
Well, and you know, and with that, with my scenario of my neighbor I just described, I do not think I will ever, ever, ever need to be violent with that guy. But I may need to show him that I could be, and that he had better back off with his, because that guy could get violent, but he's not going to get violent if he knows that I can bite back. And if we get to a position where more and more people, especially the loving hippies who just want, we don't want anyone to die, man. So let's take away the guns. Let's melt them all down. If the people who, the criminals who don't comply and do keep theirs, and when they get hungry, they're going to feel like, hey, this is a free for all. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to go over to that guy who I know was raising 25 chickens and I didn't ever see him go up for sale. He's got to have something in his house, you know, and he'll assume, if he thinks I'm a good guy that went along with the buyback program or the whatever program to return the guns. That's nothing's going to stop him.
If you were willing to have a gun and use it against somebody in a time of lawfulness, like right now, what would you do a year and a half from now if there are no laws? If society breaks down, that person's already shown that they don't care about the laws. What do you think they're going to do when there are when the cops are busy doing other stuff and everyone's hungry? It's like you said, it's going to be open season. It's going to be a free for all for these people. So it's important that we get emotional after these shootings, and it's understandable. But that emotion is weaponized. It's by design. In fact, I would say that in a lot of cases, it's made to happen. So, you can look at the school shootings and then you can map the gun legislation that was introduced within 10 days of those school shootings. And you'll see that every single one of them matches up with gun control legislation. It's a real easy strategy. It's a real simple equation.
Yeah.
Have a school shooting, introduce gun legislation when everyone's emotional, get it passed, no questions asked. Anyone that votes against it is denounced as being, as wanting kids to die. It's very easy. It's hard to get reelected when you have that. So,
yeah. So I'm on the record as wanting grandmas to die and children to die, apparently.
Right.
So, like in Texas, we just saw this disgusting publicity stunt by who other than Beto O'Rourke.
Beto.
Come in. What did you think of that, Deborah?
It was the wrong time, wrong place.
Right.
Yeah. Because he's not any sort of, all he's doing is running for office. He's doesn't have any, he's not a public official, right?
Not anymore, I don't think.
Yeah. Yeah. It's wild. And that's a tough sell to have that stance in Texas, at least right now. It might be changing. It's changing a little bit as people from the West Coast keep continuing to flood there because California is so bad right now. But we just had our friend Buck Johnson on, and he lives in Hill Country of Texas. And I saw some of his tweets saying that is not going to go over well, even with people in Texas that might have been closer to Beto's side. So
yeah.
But Deborah, you're constantly evolving on this show. You're getting, you're looking into things. You're taking a step back. You're looking at the bigger picture. Have you changed your opinion on guns at all since embarking on this this quest for the truth?
Not really, although, I always took things at face value. And there hasn't been, to my knowledge, and I'm not keeping up with it, but any changes to legislation about gun control, even after all these major shootings take place. Am I right?
Yeah, there hasn't been much. I think did Winchester get sued after the school in Connecticut finally, so they had to pay, and bump Donald Trump banned bump stocks, and then Joe Biden's doing this big ghost gun thing now too. So I think is that going by the wayside? They're making those illegal.
Good luck.
Yeah. So yeah. Okay. So how are they going to find all the unregistered AR-15s?
It's so impossible with ghost guns. You'd never be able to find. You just 3D print them.
They could have on a Discovery Channel, like ghost gun hunters.
But so why has legislation not kind of hunkered down to make gun control happen? If that's their intent.
Well, it has. They just do. It's incremental. It's little bitty. It's little changes here, and it's state by state. So it's not like sweeping. There's a lot of, there's a lot of gun control legislation that's in place. It's not easy to go get yourself a gun, like a rifle, like that. There's a lot of steps you have to go through. In fact, I was watching Tim Pool talk about this. How these. Left-leaning journalists were doing a big article about guns and how easy it is to get guns and everything. And they were just going to show how easy it was. And they went out to the store, to the gun store and everything. And they were furious They were so mad when they wrote their article. They're like, it's like really difficult to get a gun. And everyone's like, yeah, it is actually. Right. they were blown away at all the steps it took to get the, they thought they were just going to walk in, buy an M16, come out to the to the parking lot and film themselves and be like, see, we just went in here and got this machine gun in 5 minutes and anyone can do it. What they found was that it's a huge pain in the ass to get yourself a gun. Background checks, and it's got to be shipped to a certain location where you can pick it up from a registered firearms dealer and this and that. And all these restrictions, even if you buy it at a gun show, there's still restrictions to it. So it's not, the media will have you believe that you can just walk into a sporting goods store and just buy all these guns right away and take them out to your car. And you just can't do that.
That's evident. I mean, that's what we've been told this 18-year-old kid did.
Let's get conspiratorial, because the hardware that kid had, he had two AR-15s, Deborah. He had Daniel Defense AR-15s, and those are what they
I don't
were.
Know.
Any, yeah, and that's, I don't what, that's why I'm explaining what they.
Okay.
In the gun world, those are what they describe as Gucci AR-15s. They're real nice ones. They're $2,000 a piece, Mark 18s. He has EOTech holographic sights on them. Those are $600 each. This kid is a trans, poverty-stricken Latino, and that's apparently, he's been teased and bullied about being poor his whole life. So he's got $5,000 worth of guns, and he had something like a $70,000 Ford F-250 to transport himself to this shooting. It's very, very fishy. So despite, you know, we can talk about all this legislation and how it's all crazy and all that stuff, but if we get back into Gladio and activate people that are being activated, it's very fishy. I may have got all that information off a meme, but I tend to believe things like that. So
I heard it was his grandmother's car, that he took his grandmother's car after he shot her in the face. He took her car,
her truck,
I guess, and crashed it and then did his thing. Where would he get $5,000?
I want to make a point to what Charlie was saying, Deborah, of that it's a long time media trick that we're dealing with, that anybody thinks that this is a simple process to go and do this. I forget the name of it. Was it Bowling for Columbine? Was a movie by Michael Moore. I never saw that, but I saw another one called Michael Moore Hates America, where they exposed that movie. It was the behind the scenes of that movie. And apparently there's a scene in Michael Moore's film where he goes to a bank where they're doing a promotion, where they're giving out an AR something. I can't remember what, a rifle of some type. Yeah. And in the movie, they showed the clip in the one that I saw. And in that, Michael Moore goes in, he says, I would like to open a bank account. Here's $100. That's my minimum. Now I have a savings account with you. Can I please get my AR-15? And they say, hold on one moment. And they open the vault and they pull out a rifle and they hand it to him. And he walks out with it over his shoulder, holding it like a baseball bat, because he's a dingbat himself. But they show this other documentary, Michael Moore Hates America, talk to the bank. They said that is under no circumstance anything they ever did. They did have some kind of promotion that was to help you. You got a voucher to save a few bucks on a rifle from another place, something to that effect. They never kept these things on premise. They never kept them in the vault.
Crazy that
they showed that Michael Moore paid them a considerable amount of money to break every rule that they had in their bank to keep an AR in the, or whatever it was. I don't want to overstate what kind of gun it was, because it was a long time ago. But they kept a rifle in there. He paid them to put this into their vault, to stage the whole thing, to go to a specific teller so that the camera could catch that vault door and everything, so that they could say, okay. And they turn around and it was a staged act. And on top of all of that, everyone involved was under the impression that this was a pro-gun film that Michael Moore was making. Every single one of them were in that. So that's, I mean, that's just one case where they went to an extreme amount just to be able to show you the idea that it's that simple to get your hands on a rifle.
And I think it's also important for people to understand that, like, in his, I'm not trying to psychoanalyze Michael Moore in particular, yeah, but in their eyes, the ends justify the means, because yeah, we have to lie a little bit about it. And yeah, we maybe added a little, this, we're making a movie here, man. But look, if it saves one kid, then we're good. You know, that's the justification for it. It's like, no, you're lying. You're creating a false scene. You're trying to make it seem like it's one way when it's clearly a totally different way. And it doesn't matter. So, but they don't care about that, because in their minds, they're saving the world. Now, if, you know, if I was doing something devious and I thought that in my heart I was saving the world, and maybe I could justify it to myself. I'm sure I could, you know, I'm sure I could just talk myself into it. But as long as I thought I was helping. So I understand that they think that they're helping with the gun control. And if gun control actually controlled people from going into schools and shooting them up, I'd be all for it. Of course, but it doesn't work that way. It's so nuanced. There's so many different things. And you know, of course, the hypocrisy, the utter hypocrisy of the Biden administration coming out and talking about how guns are killing people, while last week giving $40 billion in weaponry to Ukraine and leaving $85 billion of weapons in Afghanistan, but screaming about gun control at home. Like, it's just, it's like the wrong message from the wrong administration at the wrong time. Like, it just, it's hard to do that with a straight face, but of course they don't care. They have no conscience or ability for self-reflection. They don't recognize how hypocritical they look. They're on a mission, so they don't care. And of course they just assume that we're all stupid anyway, that we can't look at that and go, what are you talking? You're so worried about guns? Obama's so worried about guns? You sold $165 billion worth of arms to the Saudis. Yeah. You had a kill list, a drone strike kill list, and you're going to lecture me about gun safety? Are you out of your mind? But that's what they do.
Yeah, the Saudi Arabia one is just so blatant and out there.
It's awful.
And just nobody on the left, Deborah, will say, like, why are we such tight friends with Saudi Arabia, but we're talking about human rights violations everywhere else in the world? Do you think mm-hmm. that Saudi Arabia is a good place for women or gays or trans children of color, or just people of color, probably,
or just people?
Yeah. just people. Just people in general. Yes. What is your answer? Yes or no?
Do I think it's a good place for guns to be, or
no? Do you think it's a good place for trans people or gay people?
I'm sure it's not.
But people like Obama will sell them a bunch of arms, and there are ally. But you know, we talk about all these human rights violations everywhere else in the world. That's hypocrisy.
Ooh.
there you go. Yeah, there we go. Charlie, what else have you been keeping an eye on? We know we talked about SPARS last time. Have you been connecting the dots on any predictions that were in that document that are coming true these days?
Well, you know what? I actually had been working on not just the SPARS pandemic document, but that scenario, that simulation that they ran. They ran another simulation in December of 2015 called Food Chain Reaction.
Oh God.
And Food Chain Reaction was brought to you by four groups. It had four main sponsors. And the sponsors were a group called Center for American Progress, which is John Podesta's political action campaign.
He's a good guy.
Pedophile monster.
He's got a nice art collection though.
Yeah, he does. The World Wildlife Fund. Remember the WWF wrestling had to change its name to the WWE because the World Wildlife Fund had it, and everyone's like, Yeah, they're taking care of pandas and everything.
Yeah, the panda logo.
Panda logo.
Well, the World Wildlife Fund was started by Prince Philip.
Oh, great guy, too.
Who said that when he died, he wanted to be reincarnated as a deadly virus so that he could wipe out humanity. That guy, when he left, he turned over control of it to Maurice Strong, who is the Canadian Rockefeller, who is the godfather of global warming. So we've got John Podesta's group in charge as a sponsor. We've got the World Wildlife Fund as a sponsor. We have Cargill, who's like a Monsanto, a big agricultural food company. And you go, oh, well, they can't be as bad as Monsanto, until you realize, oh, they won the award for, quote, the worst company in the world. They've got a trophy for that. And then you go, okay, well, who's the fourth sponsor? And they, well, Mars is. Mars candy bars.
You
go,
Mars bars.
It can't be anything in their past. Well, you know, they just got busted for child and slave labor and deforestation in the African National Park. So these are the groups that are running Food Chain Reaction. Now, what Food Chain Reaction was it's a scenario, a simulation that took place over a couple of days in Washington, D.C. in November of 2015. And what they did is they said, let's get together and let's figure out what the world will look like from the years 2020 to the years 2030, right? That 10-year window. And what we're going to do is we're inviting all these people from different countries in, and we're going to put them in breakout groups. Like, you go in this room and you go in that room and you go in that. And so the groups that they had, were, they had Brazil, China, India, the European Union as one big group, United States, and Africa all together. And then two other groups. One was called Business and Investors, and the other one was Multinational Institutions. So that was like the IMF and the World Bank. And they'd run this scenario. They'd say, the year is 2020, and we have just had food problems because the supply chain is breaking down, and there's civil unrest, you know, with just fictional scenarios. Wink, wink. And what do we do? And so they'd put these groups in different rooms, and they'd have them work on that, what their response would be to this problem. And they broke down the time frames into four different sections. One was from 2020 to 2021. So those first 2 years, that was one group. The next round was 2022 to 2024. The next round after that was 2025 to 2027. And then the final round was 2028 to 2030. And so after each round, based on what these groups of countries wanted to do, whatever they suggested their plan of attack was, they would take that information, and then the people that were controlling the simulation would then introduce, they'd say, all right, well, we're going to round two. So the year is now 2022, and this is what happens. Boom. And they give them the new scenario, and it's like, food security is at crisis peak. People are starting to riot. There's big problems. What do we do now? And so they'd finish that. They'd write out what they wanted to do, and then they'd go into round three and round four. So the whole thing simulated food shortages, supply chain breakdowns, social unrest, and agricultural issues, gas shortages. I mean, exactly what we're going through now.
Like,
exactly. And in the end, they came up, they said, well, what are we going to, you know, what's the plan going forward? What did all these groups, all these countries finally decide on? Well, they decided on a couple of things. They decided that the United Nations should definitely be in charge of everything, that the United Nations needs to start a new group underneath their umbrella that will be in charge of like food scarcity, that those groups need to be have their that group needs to have its own military. It needs to be deployed in advance in countries with its military, just in case there's a food situation. And we desperately need carbon to be priced, carbon marketplaces to be opened up, cap and trade to be installed, and then a carbon credit trading system to be installed, all run by the United Nations.
So wait, is this about food, or is this about in the environment.
Exactly. Yeah. Is this about food or is this about a carbon tax? It's always about something else. It's always about how do we use a disaster to get us to where we want to go? We want to go to a carbon tax. That's Club of Rome wrote about that in 1971. Al Gore has been talking about it forever. The guys from Enron went to prison for this, for cap and trade. Maurice Strong, who I just mentioned, was Al Gore's mentor, taught him this carbon tax hustle. The United Nations is driving the boat on this whole thing, and it's about a carbon tax. It's going to make central banking look like nothing when they get done with it. They're going to say, this is the allotable amount of carbon in the atmosphere. If you produce this much over, you've gone over. You have to buy carbon credits from us. The World Bank, IMF, Goldman Sachs group that started this marketplace. Actually, truth be told, the marketplace has already been created. It was created in Chicago a couple of years ago by a company that was started by Maurice Strong. And when they got Barack Obama on their board of directors, he made it a reality and made it happen. So there's already a carbon marketplace that nobody knows about in Chicago. So this is the plan. Is they want carbon taxes. And you go through this whole thing. It's a 47-page document that people can find. It's called Food Chain Reaction. And you keep going through. It's all food, 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 food. And then you get to the end. And the solution is all carbon taxes.
What do the carbon taxes look like for individual Joe Schmo citizens like us, Charlie?
So here's how it'll work.
Because I know a lot of it's, you know, corporations are going to be selling their carbon, their leftover ones and buying them. And so they're not going over and people are going to get carbon credit exemptions and all that shit. But what does it look like for a guy like Chud and I who are on a little tiny bit of acreage with a diesel tractor?
So it looks like the new sort of topic that we're hearing the World Economic Forum and others, especially BlackRock, talk about is ESG, environmental, social, and governance, ESG scores. It's like a social credit score for corporations. If you're very environmental, your score goes up. If you're socially conscious, like you have black transsexual midgets on your board of directors, your score is definitely going to go up. If the people that work there are all the right color and shape and size and multiple genders, then that's a good thing. So it's a real woke ideology, real ridiculous ideology. And that ESG is going to take a look. First, they're going to come up with a score for these corporations. Of course, you know, ExxonMobil and the airline industry and the United States military, they'll all get exemptions. I mean, they're not going to be held accountable for any of this stuff. But then when it comes down,
when they're doing that too, they're going to say that that's for them, not for you. That's the top 1%. That's all we're going to mess with this ESG.
Of course.
But go on.
Yeah. 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 That, much like they did when they rolled out income taxes. Oh, this is just for the very, very top percent. And then next thing you know,
during wartime.
Right. It's just during wartime. So
we would never ESG your ass down here, just trying to run a farm or get to work or whatever.
Except that they have already given away their plan because one of the banks showed the ESG tied credit card that they had. And this credit card, so think of it like this. You go to the grocery store, person scanning your stuff. You it scans all your stuff. You put your credit card in. It says, sorry, hey, your credit card is declined. You've exceeded your meat ration for the month. I'm sorry, I can't sell you all the hamburger you bought for the 4th of July, for the Memorial Day barbecue you guys are having because you've already exceeded your allotment. That's what it'll look like in a practical sense.
Or your score will be low because you've been supporting companies with low ESG scores.
Right.
I heard on one of the most recent No Agendas, somebody sent Adam Curry the info on, they already had it like on their, I think it was a B of A ATM card. Like you could see it on their app or on their website that they had a score already. I'm not sure if it was B of A, but that's what Adam Curry said he thought it was. But yeah, it's one of the big banks.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a MasterCard that I saw that's tied to it. So it's in the early stages. I mean, they're going to get better at it. Think of it like this. Like you go to the grocery store, you use your frequent shopper's card, right? You scan it because you're going to get 50 cents off on those eggs over there. But they're mapping everything that you buy. And I have a marketing degree. So I see that stuff and I don't automatically go to my conspiratorial place. I think of it like, well, if I'm running a grocery store, you know, I want to know what people buy. I want to know I can target the coupons to this person. It'll be a bet. You know, I can recognize the strategy behind it. I also fully recognize it can be that information can be weaponized and used against you. But initially you go, oh, okay, well, I understand what they're doing. So of course it'll always start off with like benefits. Well, use this credit card and you'll get, not just cash back, but it'll make your social credit score go up and you'll get all this stuff. Then they start to map and they build a profile of what you buy and what you normally buy. And it's tied to your credit card. So they see that. And next thing you know, they've come up with some sort of allotable amount of meat you can buy as an example, or gas you can buy. Like you said, like, how does this impact you? You got a little diesel truck or whatever. Well, you bought too much gas this month.
Yeah.
The pump just shuts off when you put your credit card. It just shuts off. You put 6 gallons and you need 16 gallons. Well, I got 6. That's all I got.
Yeah. We could, I can imagine people not being able to get to work, people being put back in their houses or told that they need to live closer to a city. Maybe you can't afford to live in a nice apartment in the city, but they will put you up entice
people into those smart cities that you were working on building when you were building elevators there, Adam.
Yeah, Charlie, I used to be an elevator mechanic, mm-hmm. and all I did was I commuted to Portland every day and just put up these cookie cutter, 500 square foot complexes, and they were all the same. They all had the first floor of retail and then two or three more floors of little tiny micro lofts is what they would normally call them, or something like that, cute name. Yeah. And I built those for 5 years in Portland, and it was soul crushing, man. And that's all there is. It's happening in every city all around the country. Portland is a beautiful city and they're just demolishing square blocks. A whole city block by my wife's work in Southeast Portland just magically burned down. And now that block is cleared and they're putting in a foundation right now. So it's, I can see them shutting gas pumps off on people and sitting people at home. And then what do? They give you some money, they give you a VR headset, and you've got it made. You don't even have to do anything anymore. And I think that's
the carbon tax scam is going to be brilliant though, because if you think about it, like they've just set an arbitrary allotment for this much carbon that can be expelled. I don't know. Let's just call it 100, right? If you come in every month at 110, you've exceeded that. You have to buy this extra 10 allotment somewhere else. Some other guy came in at 85, right? So he's got 15 units to sell. They go to the carbon marketplace. Maybe that guy holds on to his, carries over to next year, or maybe he decides to sell it in the marketplace. Who's running the marketplace? Goldman Sachs and Citigroup are already involved in running this. So it's a brand new casino game that they've developed. They set the allotment wherever they want. Anything above that, you got to buy carbon offsets. They're going to make money on selling carbon offsets that they just deem they're in charge of for whatever reason. They're going to take that money. Are they going to fix whatever sort of carbon situation? No, they never say they're going to fix it. They just say they're going to tax you on it. Now, the assumption is that, they're taxing me because they're going to take that money and then fix the problem. There is no problem. That's the scam. There's no problem with carbon.
Yeah.
It's a gigantic con. It's another invisible enemy like COVID and terrorism, right? Some people interact with it, but most people don't. Nobody knows how much carbon's in the atmosphere, like the right amount, because it fluctuates all the time. In fact, some of the scientists that aren't on the payroll say we're like a low carbon output. But regardless, let's say we're at a high carbon output. Let's say we get down to carbon zero. Everybody's riding bicycles and nobody has a car and nothing is flying or anything. That Icelandic volcano that went off 10 years ago put more carbon in the atmosphere than all of mankind combined. Yeah. 1 week. What are we doing? We're fighting against one volcano will come and just nullify everything that we're doing. Because it's not about that.
Well, you
it's
have to ask yourself how dangerous is this carbon? How dangerous is this carbon? It's dangerous that
plants need it to live.
Yeah, right. Because my vegetable garden would argue that needs at least a little.
There's some crazy statistic about what a cruise ship puts off too.
Oh and my God. I forget. 12, I saw that and I was like
12 feet to the gallon of diesel. That's what you're getting on this. I don't know how accurate that still is, but my friend, and it wasn't cruise ships, but diesel cargo ships. He's a mechanic. When he first got into it, that was like close to the year 2000. But that was one of the first things he learned about diesel cargo ships.
Oh man, let's hear
12 feet you guys, to a gallon.
You guys want just feet to the gallon. Some beautiful irony. Watch this, Deborah. How many cruises a year does your sister go on usually? Like 3-4?
No.
Huh?
I don't know.
You can estimate. It's your sister. How many?
Couple.
3-4, I'd bet. She's always on a cruise. I've known your sister for 8 years almost. I'd say she's been on 20 cruises since I've known her.
It's possible.
She just got a new Tesla, so she's doing the right thing.
That's her carbon credit. That's her carbon credit right there. She'll save on the driving around, but then she gets the 12 feet to a gallon for 4 cruises a year.
But the Tesla is a scam too. The electricity is coming from coal burning power plants.
So and we talked about
lithium mining. Let's be honest, the amount of
rights,
mining happening to make the batteries. I mean, look, I have to live on this planet too. You know, I want what's best for it. Here's what I always, when I get into the climate change is fake argument, I always have to sort of remind people of this. When I say that, I want to be crystal clear. Pollution is real. And we treat this planet like a toilet. Sometimes, you know, what we put into the rivers and the oceans and in the sky, it's horrible. We have to be better about that. That's what I think most people are sad about when they see and they say, what are we doing? And I want to get on top, you know, I want to do what's right to what's best to fight climate change. Don't get climate change and pollution confused because they're two different things. The Club of Rome, which is a devious depopulation organization that was started by David Rockefeller and Dr. Alexander King. They wrote a paper in the 70s called The Limits to Growth. In 1971, they wrote it, put it out in 1972. And in this paper, they specifically, I had the whole two paragraphs in my octopus book. They specifically laid out that they were going to use in the future the threat of global warming. They said it, global warming, as the pretext that mankind needs a common enemy to unite around. When searching for that common enemy, we decided that global warming would fit the bill, whether it was real or something created for these purposes. So they say that they're going to do it. But the reason why they said we need this, they said mankind needs to be brought together to face a common enemy in order to accept a one world government. And that the idea of carbon, of climate change was going to be the boogeyman they were going to use to force everyone into the one world government. And that the carbon tax that they create to solve the problem that they invented would be the funding mechanism for the one world government.
Yeah.
I didn't come up with that. They did. They wrote it in their book. Your Honor, the witness admitted it in the book.
Page 76.
Right, it's right there.
Oh man, remember An Inconvenient Truth?
Yeah.
Man, that was just, what was his prediction? Like 10 years?
So Al Gore is a total con artist.
Yeah.
I mean.
Didn't he come up with the carbon credit concept?
Maurice Strong, one of the co-founders of the Club of Rome, and an instrumental figure. Klaus Schwab spoke at Maurice Strong's funeral and said that if it wasn't for Maurice Strong, the World Economic Forum would never have come into existence. I relied on the hundreds and hundreds of hours we had together as in order to give me the idea to launch this thing. So Maurice Strong, who's dead now, he died in 2015. He's the godfather of global warming. He taught Al Gore the carbon tax hustle, as I call it. And Maurice Strong taught that to Al Gore, and Al Gore taught that to Ken Lay from Enron.
Oh,
Ken Lay went to prison for this so these guys are all connected together. So the global warming. So the good news is global warming is not going to kill you. It's the reason why you can find those pictures in 1900 of the water level at some historic landmark. And it's exactly the same as it is today. The good news is the sea levels aren't rising. It's just as easy to buy a scientist for climate change as you can buy a scientist to tell you that COVID is going to kill you and everybody has to inject themselves. So all of these, all of the scientists, it's all a scam using the very real cover story of pollution as the, you know, emotional connection that gets people, you know, and the polar bear off there shrinking away. Oh, and we've got to save the polar bears. We've got to save the pandas. Again, World Wildlife Fund with the panda logo. It's Prince Philip and Maurice Strong. Again, these guys, this is a scam. It's a gigantic scam. So once you identify the players, then you just look and see who they're connected to. And what you find are all these companies, all these non-governmental organizations, all these charities. They love charities. They hide behind charities like crazy because it's a perfect cover.
Greenpeace is big in on it. And I can't remember the exact numbers, but a long time ago, when the Green New Deal first kind of came into the ether, Tom Woods had on like the former head of Greenpeace. And he was like blowing the whistle on the bullshit of the Green New Deal. And he's like, no fewer, I can't remember what the number was, but it was like millions and millions and millions of people would die if the Green New Deal was enacted.
And that's the plan.
Yeah.
Because at their core, Maurice Strong, David Rockefeller, Henry Kissinger, all of these guys, the thread that runs through all of these people and all of their organizations is depopulation.
Yeah,
that's the common denominator here. So of course they know it will kill millions and millions of people. That's the plan.
Yeah,
that's the plan.
Oh boy, Deborah, what are you thinking?
I'm just thoroughly depressed.
But no. But the good news is here. There is good news. The climate stuff that they're trying to scare you with is not real. So you don't have to worry about that. I mean, put your, like, let's recycle and let's do the right things that we can. But as far as like, there's going to be too much carbon in the atmosphere and everyone's going to die. It's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. The planet is at a low carbon point too. Like if you look at where it's been over the thousands and thousands and thousands of years, it goes up, it comes down, it goes up, it comes down. We're not even in like a particularly dangerous time.
Yeah.
Deborah, that end game sounds terrible. It is terrible. Depopulation is terrible. But they're not going to win if we don't let them. You know, right now, again, I keep bringing up the food security because that's a big issue to me and my family. But that's where we take the power back. It's through things like food security. You know, you took one of Lanny's courses, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I've got some beans fermenting right now.
You're fermenting. That's what you should be doing. Learning how to take these things into our own hands and saying no to the powers that be with their crazy endgame of depopulation. All you really have to do is say, not me, not my family, and start taking matters into your own hands and just not playing the game. They're going to play that game and they're going to play it hard, and you might lose friends because they get sucked right into the game, but that doesn't mean you have to. Yeah. And if you hold on to yours, then that end game just won't affect you.
Yeah. It comes back to that whole thing we talked about, just the power of no.
Power of no. It's so
powerful. It got me through that whole 2 years of the problem with the air. Just no, you know?
Yeah. 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 We're in an interesting time. They're throwing everything they can against us. I think they feel that we're waking up. I mean, a segment is waking up. They've got there's a benchmark date. The date is 2030. Everything is predicated on 2030. That's their big finish line. That's when the Agenda 21 has two different benchmarks. One is 2030 and one is 2050. They really want to have everything done by 2030. That's why these food chain reactions simulate 2020 to 2030. That's why
you will own nothing.
You'll own nothing. That's why, yeah, the Build Back Better you know, all of that is has that target date. When you see 2030, you know that that's the United Nations. And so it's, you know, they do that. They hide behind these names like United Nations. You go, oh, look, they're uniting nations together. Isn't that great? Like kumbaya. It's like, well, not really. I mean, it's United Nations into a one world government, but they never tell you that part. Or it's the World Health Organization. They're just taking care of the health of the world, don't you know? And it's like, no, that's under the umbrella of the United Nations as well. They're, you know, they're involved in the medical component of this and of the depopulation drive, and the people at the top know it. Now, the majority of the people that are down at the mid-level to low level, they have no idea what's going on. They're as clueless about this as the governments in Europe that were clueless about Gladio operating in their country. Like the Italian judge that finally blew the whistle on it, he went to like the prime minister and was like, how come you didn't tell us about this? He's like, I had no idea. None of us knew. We didn't know. They really didn't know. So it is possible to compartmentalize this and to have this at the very top and to have only certain people along these groups know what's going on. But the problem with that is that once you know who those certain people are, just watch where they go and look what organizations they interact with and who they talk to and where they speak. And, you know, and when you do that, then it's easy to kind of figure out what they're doing. So we're in a real pivotal time here, you know, like it's going to go one way or the other. Either they're going to get us into some sort of weird social credit system where we're ratting on our neighbors to make our score go up and worrying about our ESG score and how much meat we're allowed to buy and normalizing eating bugs and things like that. Or we're going to tell these people, we do not consent to that and we're not going to participate. If enough people stand up, it's over. So, I mean, that's why I feel like it's a really pivotal time. Like as a writer, you know, I'm like, I want to like see as much of what's going on. But as a podcast person, as a human being, I want to be right in the middle and trying to help out. But as a writer, I'm like, this is fascinating. What's happening?
This is the wildest time in the history of the last 2000 years. I'm really excited to see what's going to happen. I like the fact that, I mean, I talked to a lot of conspiracy theorists and crazy people like Chud X and I, and they're all doing everything they can to exit society. But on top of that, there is a huge number of just the more normal, I talked to like a lot of liberty people who are a little bit weird, and then just a lot of normal people. And everyone I talk to is trying to leave the city, get out, quit the matrix, and come back to some semblance of like order and tradition. And I think that throws a giant monkey wrench in the gears of this, you know, satanic cult that's trying to push this agenda on people. Charlie, we got to respect your time. Will you give us a 6 month prediction?
6 month prediction. Okay. So let's talk. We'll be at the end of this year. I'm not comfortable about the position and status of the United States dollar. I think that that's the sign. I think when you see the dollar lose its status as the world's reserve currency, which is going to happen at some point, I think that's when things are going to get real hairy, because it's going to have a contagion effect. You know, it's going to impact the banks, the value of your savings will, you know, value of the dollar will drop pretty substantially, 30% overnight. It gets depegged as the world's reserve currency, or if we go off of the petrodollar arrangement, which is, they're working on taking us off of that. You know, the Chinese are trying to go around and deal with the Saudis directly. If that happens, we're going to be in some trouble as far as just the value of our money. But there's ways around that. You can convert some of your soon to be worthless fiat dollars into something else. You can buy gold or silver or some, or crypto or whatever,
chainsaws,
or you can buy
and tractors and
food. Exactly. Yeah. Productive hammers, farmland. If you don't have a ton of money, you know, bullets. I mean, I hate to be like, I'm not trying to be like tinfoil hat guy or anything, but like, you're just, you basically what you're doing is you're just swapping what you hold your wealth in, regardless of what your wealth is. You just say, I'm in America. I get paid in dollars. I spend dollars. So I save in dollars. Well, why? You know, maybe you want to save it in something else and convert it to dollars, just the minimal amount. If you think the dollar is going to collapse, which I do, and Berwick and I wrote this book saying that will be the trigger. I think that's a reasonable thing. So the bad news is I think that we're going to have dollar problems. The good news is there's ways around that. There's ways to prevent, you know, to move your money out in advance. I would definitely advise people to think about that stuff. I mean, not in like a, I'm trying to bum myself out kind of way, but like, let's take advantage of this time that we have where it's relatively calm. Get yourself ready, food, get your money out of the bank, you know, get it in some different, hold it a different way.
Get your crypto off Coinbase.
It's also a great time to learn skills.
Great time to learn skills. It just reminds me how few skills I have. I'll be eaten in the first week by the zombie apocalypse.
It's a lot easier.
Chad, you're going to be around for years. I'll be eaten right away. I'm unvaccinated, which means you can eat me. And I have very few life skills. I have no chickens at all. I'm a goner.
Yeah, no, it's, but you know, I just want to throw with everything that you're saying, skills now, when it hasn't collapsed, it's easier to grow a garden when it's not under the duress of a collapsed society around you than it is to try and figure that shit out at that time.
Well, I don't know. It's kind of easy. We saw what they did in the unlawful area of Chaz and Chop, where they were trying to grow
pizza boxes.
They were growing them on pizza boxes with potting soil. And these guys are like, grow, grow. And then like some guy high on PCP comes and kicks all of them over.
If I remember correctly, even if they did get those whatever kale they were growing there to grow, the white boys like us weren't welcome to try any of it. So
no, and the government would probably tax you to death.
Yeah.
Did you ever see that picture of that place that said the blacks only garden?
Yeah.
Oh God.
Deborah, sorry to ruin your Friday night. Do you have any final thoughts or questions for Charlie until we talk to him in another 6 months?
I just wondered if what you're opinion on the baby formula shortage.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Don't give your children high fructose corn syrup.
Yeah. I mean, baby formula is, I would say the vast majority of it is kind of like junk food for kids, maybe not the best stuff, but I fully recognize that it's the only option for some women. Yeah. And it should be an option. I mean, you should always have that as an option in case you need it. Very, you know, I get a bit suspicious. I feel like there's some manipulation going on with that because there was an FDA component to it where they closed down a baby food making.
Some company that makes 40% of it got shut down.
Yeah, issue with Abbott. Yeah, and so that's you know, if it's just a normal story in a normal year, I go whatever. That could happen. We've got supply chain issues. We've got the Biden administration coming out and saying food's going to be tight. We have I'm already in this strategy of tension mindset where I'm going, well, they're just trying to get you from every kind of direction, right? So unfortunately, I do put on my tinfoil hat with stuff like that. And I try not to go there, but I wind up going, well, it seems like it could be made to happen. And that's the biggest problem here is that let's just say it's a completely natural, organic thing that happened, just bad luck. They've done so many crappy things over the year that it is well within my right, and it is very reasonable for me to make the assumption that maybe it is manufactured. Maybe mm-hmm. they are doing this on purpose.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like I'm allowed to go there because I can point to a dozen things that they have manufactured.
Not only do they scare us, but there's that real emotional component because, you know, we've got to take care of the babies.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, if you're sitting in your evil lair trying to dream up ways that you can put pressure on Americans to make them very uncomfortable, that would be a good way to do it because, you know, you're talking, like you said, you're talking about the most valuable thing in the world and you're creating additional stress while you have inflation that's going up, while you have job insecurity, you have a variety of things, and then you throw that in there. It's just kind of incremental insanity, where they just added one little thing. You think, well, baby formula is not going to take down the empire. Probably not.
It's part of it. It's such a scary thing to think about. My heart goes out to people that have to give their children baby formula. ChudX and I have talked about it. And if you want, Deborah, you're obviously not supporting ChudX and his awesome wife, Lanny, by following their podcast, The World As It Is Today.
Yeah, check out The World As It Is Today, episode 20, A Formula for Disaster. Lanny and I go real deep on this. And you'll learn a few things about baby formula, where it comes from, how long it's been around, who's behind it. I'll give you a little hint. Nestle is in there.
Oh, great.
And then I understand that there are people who are not going to like to hear this, but there are alternatives to formula that are out there. It takes a little bit of work. It's not necessarily available to everyone, but it's available to 90% of people. And within that, you're going to get fed some bogus statistics that we'll break down for you and make it understandable that it is not, they'll tell you that 80% of babies are breastfeeding right now, which gives you this idea that only 20% of babies could be affected by this, but it's actually an inversion. And it's about 22% that are not being affected by this. Wow. So most babies are being affected by this problem.
Yeah. And the one thing that I thought about that was really scary is just like the feeling of powerlessness of like the fact that you could have food in your refrigerator and your baby could starve to death. Like,
I can't fully wrap my head around that. There's part of me that wants to say that's a psyop on its own, that they're trying to make us believe that, but you know what? That is not, anytime we're talking about a starving baby, that is not a place to try and figure out what is and isn't a PSYOP, in my opinion. You want to keep that
well,
baby.
Well, guys, Weston A. Price, I'll show you how to make baby formula. So
that's a good place to go.
Go there. Charlie, let's get you out of here. Okay. We're really happy to have talked to you again. Deborah is disturbed. So I'm the best at doing that. You've been doing it since day one. I know I just want to commend you, man. A lot of people in this space talk about how much they help other shows when they just say that. You help everybody. You go on like a brand new podcast, like 5 times a week?
Billy Ray Valentine calls me the hardest working man in the alternative media. But that I feel like the first step in fixing some of these problems is talking about them. And I know that that's not like a real solutions-based thing, but if it's the first time you're thinking about these things, then you have to have the conversation. So I want to do that. I want to have that conversation as much as possible. And maybe that will spark people to kind of like wake up and go, oh, shoot, there's some things that are going on here that I wasn't aware of. I mean, I wasn't aware of them several years ago either. These people are very devious at what they do. So I feel this like a duty, an obligation, and a desire to talk about it as much as I can and get on, you know, to see if we can't figure this out. I mean, I desperately want to do a podcast about football. That's all I really want to do.
Yeah.
But I also feel like that would be fun. And maybe I will at some point, but there's so many other priorities in terms of like, football's not going to be that big of a deal if we're all eating the bugs. And so let's make sure that these very real things that actually impact our lives are sorted out first. And then I can go, like, if I get to the point where I am doing a football podcast, then you know that things have gotten better in the world. So that's my goal is that. My goal is get to the point where I don't feel like we're in crisis mode. But right now, like, I would regret not doing everything I could to talk about this stuff, write about it, do my own show about it, and just try to get us all thinking about some solutions for it. So that's my thing. So, and I appreciate you guys having me back on because, and I know that Deborah, I know this stuff sounds like apocalyptic and everything, but we talk about it. We talk about where they want us to, where they want to take us, not because we enjoy the misery of that, but because if we know where they want to take us, we can do what we can to prevent that from happening. So right. We're it's like we have to acknowledge our problem, you know, mm-hmm. and get honest about it, and then if we're going to do something about it. So I try to walk that line between like, I don't want to scare the hell out of everybody, but at the same time, like I have to let you know, I have to, based on my research and what I found, I have to let you know how close we are to some bad things happening. So I don't want to sugarcoat it, but I also don't want to be the guy that's like, we're all going to die, you know, cause nobody wants to hear that. And it's counterproductive. So I think just doing what we can to talk about it, recognize what we see coming. I mean, and be, I guess, fearful if we get there, but say, okay, well, can we do something about it now? Yeah, we can do something about it. We can do a lot about it. Well, let's do it now, because we're going to get ourselves to a point where we can't do anything about it. When we're in the digital prison, you know, the virtual digital prison with ID, internet ID cards and social credit scores and ESG credit cards and all that stuff. It's too late at that point.
Yeah.
IV of bug goo.
Right. We're just debating about what color we want to paint our pod. Who cares? We've got to have the conversation now about this is where they want to take us. These are the cartoon characters like Klaus Schwab. They're up there talking about this, dressed like a Bond villain, talking about you'll eat the bugs, talking about you'll own nothing and be happy. Well, let's pay attention to this guy, because if we don't, and then we look at our calendar and it is the year 2030, the world will be unrecognizable at that point. So that's why I do it. And I appreciate you having me on. And I just love interacting with everyone else in this little community, because I've met some really good people in the alternative media, people that have paid a price to do what they do and say what they say and think what they think. And they've lost friends, they've lost jobs, they've lost relationships about this stuff and still continue to do it. That's some dedication that I can respect and appreciate. So I'm really just happy to be a part of it.
Yeah. That dedication and sticking to your guns and your principles will always be rewarded in the end. So think of that. Hey, are you going to do something with Billy Ray's new thing?
Yep.
Cool. Me too. So yep, we'll see over he there when me. It starts.
He told me, I said, oh, good. Yeah. He's got an all-star lineup going.
Yeah.
There.
Bags is drawing me a logo right now. So,
oh, perfect.
Charlie, thank you so much. You came, you saw, you kicked ass. And we really appreciate you. Your podcast is great. Give us some plugs and let's get out of here.
Okay. Macroaggressions. I do two episodes a week. One is a monologue. One is an interview. That goes out in audio format wherever podcasts are available, and in video on David Icke's platform, Iconic, on Rockfin, on Odyssey, and on band.video. The website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can follow me on Twitter at macroaggression.
Great Twitter follow.
I got kicked off of Twitter with my old account in February of 2020. So before the pandemic situation kicked, and I got kicked off for jokingly asking the question, why don't we just throw Bill Gates into a volcano? I was early. They knew it was coming. They threw me off. So I started a new account, and this account so far, so good. I haven't had any, I haven't threatened to throw anybody in a volcano, but day's not over yet. So, yeah, yeah. So that's where people can find me. Yeah. And books are available on Amazon.
Perfect.
Hey, Adam, before we get out of here, I just want to point out too, I want to give a little quick plug for Lanny. Fermentation for food preservation. We're coming up on another workshop on June 5th. This time it's going to be a little more fun. It's going to be fermented beverages. So even if the apocalypse never comes, you will be able to have delicious, basically pop in your fridge. That's low sugar, good probiotics, and just delicious. So get a hold of us at greenerpostures@protonmail.com. $30 minimum donation for this incredible Zoom opportunity to interact with someone who knows all about preserving and fermenting.
Yeah. And all those will be in the show notes. Charlie, you're the best. Get yourself to the Pacific Northwest in case of the apocalypse, and you will be able to join the clan. We need an author and a researcher in our little group. So we'll keep you alive, and we won't eat your unvaccinated body.
I appreciate that.
Unless we have to.
Yeah.
If we did, then I don't care. I'd rather you guys live to fight another day.
So much for everything. Bye. Bye. Bye.